B-Pod Studios.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
All right, it's 4 o'clock. It's the Mike Missinelli Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. You can climb in at 610-622-0975. Talk to Brian. 4 o'clock hour is brought to us by Landis Block, your one-stop shop. They created jaw-dropping outdoor paradise online at landisbc.com. And they also bring us the great number 36, Brian Westbrook. Hello, Brian Westbrook.
Good afternoon, Mikey Miss. How are you, my friend?
It's been a while since we have chatted.
Yes, it has been. I've missed you. I can't lie. I've missed you, Natalie, as well as Tyrone. I didn't know what to do without you these last couple of
weeks. You even missed Tyrone? Man, you're getting sentimental.
I know. I'm getting soft in my older age. I'm getting soft.
All right, Brian, let's get right to it. Because, the state of sports, we have two things that we can rely on. And that's going to start tomorrow night with the Sixers and then the Flyers on Sunday. And then there's the two sports that we got. What in the hell is going to happen? So, first of all, the baseball situation with the Marlins, the Phillies, the Cardinals, a couple of Cardinals tested positive. Who knows what's going to happen there? But we're carrying this thought process over to the NFL season, which is thinks they're going to go merrily along without any of this happening. What do you feel right now about the NFL part of this?
Well, I'll say this. I think that as far as in the facility type of things, they have testing when you come in. They have all types of safeguards in place that while in the facility, I think the players are safe. And I've heard Doug Peterson and other coaches around the league say that while in the facility, they kind of feel like they're in the bubble. And I kind of understand that. And I think that makes sense. And I think it's also true because you can handle and control everything in that sterile environment, keep people away from the players. And I think it's you have to be a certain level, one or two, to even be around the players. And so there's only a certain number of people around the guys. And I've talked to a couple trainers and a couple players, quite a few players around the league. And they say they feel very safe inside the facility. Now, just like what you saw with Lou Williams in the basketball situation down in the bubble, and just like I think we'll see continuously throughout the NFL year, however long it goes, is when guys are outside the bubble and when they have their free time, what's going to happen? And it's going to take a huge level of discipline for the players' families, the kids. I mean, there are so many different levels of this thing that the players and their families and everyone that they're around are going to have to take. In my mind, it almost makes it, I don't want to say impossible, but I mean, I remember playing, Mike, and I know, every job is stressful to certain levels, and every job is all about what have you done for me lately, and your performance, and your job is based on your performance and things like that. But, in my opinion, what I've been around, there's nothing more, performance-based in the NFL. If you go out there that you may and not play well, you may not have another chance to play again in your life and to gain this type of wealth in your life. And so because of that, it's a stressful world. And because of the stress, especially when I was younger, I hung out with my friends after practice. I hung out on Friday night. I hung out on Thursday and had dinner and different types of things. To me, it's going to be hard for players young and old to be able to go to work in that stressful environment and then have to go straight home or be in a situation where when you talk about your family, your kids may have to go to school. Mm-hmm. They may be exposed to it. I mean, it's so many different things. It's just hard for me to imagine that this thing goes off as flawlessly as I think in ways the basketball, bubble has gone off. When they're talking about they haven't had a positive test, I think, since, July 12th or 20th or something like that, which to me, in essence, is pretty good, even though they had the Lou Williams deal down there in Orlando.
You bring up the exact points that I'm thinking about here with this, because we're now seeing the example in baseball. So, you're safe at the facility, and then you have to go home. But man, it's not just not going out to a club or going out socially. It's let's say you go, you want a sandwich. You go to Harold's Deli down the street, right? You still have no idea what's going to happen. So, go ahead. You were going to say something?
No. I absolutely agreed. I wasn't interrupting you at all.
Yeah. No. So I like the NFL, like, what is their plan, their contingency plan? They believe they have enough players to just fill in the blanks. But now we're seeing the, like, guys opt out. So I guess what I'm asking you is, what are the chances that this is a full season? What are the chances that it turns into a season at all if you can only play, like, 8 games?
Well, I don't think that it's a full season. I think that because of the travel, because you're staying at hotels that will have people that, you know, are in and out and may not have the same type of standards with the COVID testing as you have in the facilities and things like that. I just think it's hard to do it. And I understand the thought process of the NFL. It's always been the next man up. But it's harder to think that way when the next man up isn't Carson Wentz and it isn't, you know, your star receiver, isn't your great left tackle. It's a little bit different. It's a different style of football. And we expect injuries in this league. We expect people to get hurt their shoulder, concussions, tear ACLs. When they're missing games for COVID-19, that's a little bit different. And I think that for teams and players, that's a totally different thing. And listen, I understand the guys that are opting out. I get it. I understand why guys would say, you know what, my family life is much more important than this at this time, that I'm just going to sit out the season and wait till a vaccine is available. I understand that completely. You know, when I think about the percentage of us, that the chances of us playing a full season, I have to think that it's 50-50 at this point because we don't have the same type of safeguards in place off the field as guys in the bubble in Orlando have as far as for basketball. And that truly is probably the only way that we can control this thing and say, hey, we know these 53 guys or however many guys are going to have in a roster will be safe Sunday through Sunday. And it's just hard to do that with those types of numbers and the staff, the support staff needed to help these guys out.
Let me ask you this question, because we started talking about this yesterday, and it's preposterous to think it could happen now. But had the NFL had a little more foresight, could they have, kind of like what hockey did with two different sites, could the NFL have pulled off a more of a bubble-like protective situation if they went to, like, 4 sites and did not play games at home and away, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say that. I think because the season is so long, I mean, I think what would happen, let's say they did pull it off, and let's say it was 4 sites, and really, you probably have to have more, maybe just your division area. So, you know, when we're playing against teams, Washington, the Giants, you know, the Cowboys as well, you know, maybe we find something, some type of hub in those types of areas so we can play our division team. In my thought, the problem with that is the length of the season. I think that you would at that point see many more players saying, you know what, this ain't for me. I can't do that. I don't want to be without my 2-year-old son. I don't want to be out with my 1-year-old daughter for 17 weeks of a regular season. That's a long time. And then you have the bye week. What do you do in the bye week? I got to stay in this bubble? I can't go home?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a whole different thing. And listen, I don't know if it's foresight. I don't know how hard the NFL could have thought about it and figured out something for a 17-week stretch to try to get these guys going and be safe at the same time in a physical sport, a contact sport like we have in football.
Now, one suggestion, Brian, and Mike, you can respond to it. They didn't know how realistic it was, where you would go to those 4 different bubble sites. You would play 4 games, everybody. Then in that particular case, you would get 2 weeks off. Meaning 1 week where you can do, so you're only, I'm saying only without your family for 4 weeks. Then you have 1 week you can do whatever you want. And then there will be a testing week, basically, where you rejoin, everybody gets tested. And then you rejoin, then you play 4, do 1 week. Then you do 4, do 2 again. Basically, it would break it up. How would you have reacted to that? Or Mike, what do you think about that idea where you're at like 4 bubbles, you do a month, then you got 2 weeks off, and you adjust the regular season schedule so that they are safe and can see their family.
To me, it sounds like a good plan to me. But again, like Brian, you're looking at it from a football player standpoint where you're still kind of like dealing with the situation that would be resistant for you to go into the bubble in the first place, to being away like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but my first thought would be my concern with my family and making sure that they're okay, my ability to be around them and to enjoy my time with them when I'm off the field. You know, I think I probably would be more inclined to participate if they did that 4-week on, a couple weeks off type of schedule.
Yeah.
But is that really football? Is that how we want to digest football? Is that how
it's just a sign of the times on how you have to survive. At this point.
And with the four bubbles, you got to remember. So let's say the Eagles would play the true week one. Maybe the North would play, the South would play true week two to start. So what happens is we wouldn't all be out without football for those 2 weeks. It would be we'd be out Eagles football.
Right.
So you would still be able to watch the Sunday. You get what I'm saying? Carolina playing.
I kind of like the plan. It would be
not the easiest to execute, but they said this would be a way for like a compromise of you get football every week. The players are isolated, but they still see their families, and then they're safe because of that bubble week where you kind of work back in where everybody's tested. So you have that incubation period. They go, okay, you're clean, you're not clean, you're clean, you're not clean. Let's go back and play again.
You know, the only way that I think it probably works, you know, without having a large number of earth tests because of the amount of people that play on each team, is to have a bubble situation. And it's just harder and harder to do that with the amount of players. It's okay. You got 15 players in a basketball team and, I don't know, 5-10 coaches, whatever, in staff. But you're talking about 53 guys that have to do that. And everybody has to make the right decision. And that means when you go home, 21-year-olds that now have millions of dollars, you can't go out and you can't see these young ladies. And you can't do those things that you normally want to do. That's just a hard ask. And I couldn't imagine having to do that at 21 years old, 22 years old, or whenever I got paid. That's a hard ask for anybody that's not in a bubble situation. I mean, just imagine you're going home. You want to hang out with your friends, or your friends from out of town come into town for just to hang out or to watch the game at your home. You don't know what goes on in that household. And God forbid, if you're with your children, you're not going to stop being around your kids. And they're going to school. They're going to be, my daughter's in the second grade, and they're talking about doing, you know, part-time schooling. God forbid she goes there and is around a kid that has been exposed, and now that daughter comes back home, and I got to go play a football game on Sunday. And now on Saturday morning, I test positive. I mean, all those things certainly could happen. That would be a concern of mine. But again, I think I said this last week, a couple of weeks ago, it probably would come down to, for me, what type of monetary state am I in? And if I'm in a situation when I'm in a second year of my contract and I need to be able to, and I'm talking about my second year of playing in the NFL, and I need to make some money, I'm trying to buy a house. I'm going out there and playing football.
Yeah, I was actually going to just ask you this question. Suppose it was the year after you got paid, and you just started to have a family, and I know you do that later, but would you at that point do the opt out and take what are they paying? $150,000 for if you opt out? That's they're giving you a stipend, yeah. $150,000. Mm-hmm. Would you Damian Williams just opted out, and he's coming off a monster year, right?
Coming off a good year, yeah. and they just drafted a rookie in the first round too, and so he opted out. I think I probably wouldn't. In my right mind, I'm just being honest. I probably wouldn't.
You would play.
I probably would play.
Yeah,
and try to abide by all the safeguards. But again, it has to be everybody doing it. Not just it could be 50 guys doing it, and the other three guys not doing it, and can cause and put the team and the other players in harm's way. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest issue. Listen, Lou Williams went to a place to go outside of the bubble to get something to eat. You don't think that's going to happen in the NFL? You know, and we have 32 different cities that these guys are in. That's not going to happen in the NFL.
Well, it's going to happen, but like baseball has put out the big scare now, right? Mm-hmm. So you would think that there would be a semblance of learning, right? That you can't be as reckless as you. Look, this could happen. So we, in order for us to survive this, we can't do it. It's as simple as that. We would like to do it. It's hard not to do it, but we can't.
Again, that's the discipline that athletes will have to have this year. That's the discipline that they will have to have at a whole different level, and a discipline for them and their family as well. So it's a total different level.
And you're not feeling it can be pulled off.
I think it certainly is possible.
Yeah.
Likelihood, I don't know that it's very likely, though.
I got you. All right, 610-632-0975. Let me quick go to basketball. Because now it's for real. They get the 8 games, and then before we get to the playoffs, and the way it looks now, the Sixers have a big chance to move out of that 6th spot, to move up a little bit. You watched them in preseason. What did you think? Did we lose Brian? Oh, we lost him?
Yeah.
All right, we had to get Brian Westbrook back. We lost him. So let's go to the phones. Dave in Center City. Dave, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Dave.
Mikey Mess.
Yes, sir, Dave.
Is Brian back?
We'll get him in during the course of your call.
All right. I wanted to touch on the fact that his buddy, Shady McCoy, thinks he's going to get another Super Bowl ring by joining the Brady Bunch.
We will get B. West's reaction to Shady grabbing 1 year in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, and you know what? I wanted to rewind to 2003 with that punt return he had against the Giants to bail out the stagnant Eagle offense. He took the ball home with him. I'm wondering if he knows where that ball is.
Oh, I'm sure he does. That's in the Westbrook trophy case, don't you think?
Yeah.
Hey, you got to think, you know, come on, man. These players keep game balls.
Mike, I was thinking, okay, this coronavirus, and I hope the NFL, nobody tests positive. But if they do, and there's a plethora of positive tests, look, this plays right into the Eagles' hands. The last 2 years, the Eagles have been using third, fourth, and fifth stringers, going up against teams' first and second stringers. I would feel very confident if we're down to third and fourth stringers being coached up by Doug Peterson, taking on other fourth stringers in the league. I have that much confidence in this ball club.
Well, listen, I'm glad you do.
Oh, Mikey Mitch.
Yeah, I'm hoping it doesn't come to fourth stringers versus fourth stringers.
You ready to test the hitting streak? 36?
Where am I, 36?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. Alleged henchman from the Lakers, Kurt Rambis.
Kurt Rambis, I think you may have gotten me.
Let's
see. Kurt Rambis. Hold on. Let me think. I believe he played in the West Coast Conference. Yes. It wasn't the same school as Steve Nash? Was it Santa Clara?
Correct.
Best
sixth man ever to play basketball, Vinny Microwave Johnson.
Vinny Johnson. Woo! You're coming up with some tough ones today, brother. Vinny Johnson went to
Southwest Conference. Come on, 37 on the line.
Baylor?
Correct. 38 in a row. I love you, brother. Have a good day.
That's all you got is two?
38.
All right, man. Take care. All right, Brian, we got you back.
Vinny Johnson, I like that.
The microwave.
I used to love
Vinny Johnson. Those two were hard for me, man. They came in that was like a last-minute type of brain explosion.
Transferred from a community college to Baylor.
Okay.
And before Baylor was much of a basketball school, that's why he was, but he still ended up being a first round pick.
Okay. All right. Vinny Johnson from New York?
Yes, New York? Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Ended up at a community college, which is crazy, in Texas. So he's from Brooklyn, playing in Brooklyn, gets passed over by all those schools, goes to a community college in Texas, transfers to Baylor, ends up as a first round
pick. He had New York game, fearless.
He did. Although Ricky Pierce was the best sixth man, not Vinny. From a similar era. I thought Ricky Pierce was the sixth man from that era.
I like Ricky Pierce, too. Ricky Pierce has a name for the past.
There you go.
All right, so Dave asked, actually, he wanted to talk to you, Brian. So he wanted to ask you what you thought of Shady McCoy grabbing a one-year deal, thinking he's going to get a Super Bowl ring in Tampa Bay.
Well, he got a ring last year in Kansas City.
Uh-huh.
Listen, why not go ring chasing if you're LeSean McCoy?
Uh-huh.
We don't know how much longer he has left on those legs. Why not? And he's in a good situation to have a young back in Ronald Jones down there. Why not? You'll go out there and play a role. You play with the best quarterback ever, one of the best tight ends that have ever played the game in Rob Gronkowski. I think it's a great situation for him. And most importantly, this is one of the things that you don't think about as much as a player, or actually as a player you probably do. Maybe you don't think as much about it as a fan. The atmosphere, the environment, the weather in Tampa Bay is going to be good for an older running back with a lot of mileage on his legs. playing in that warm climate throughout the season in that NFC South is going to be really good for LeSean McCoy.
Well, I know he's your man, so him lasting this long, has it surprised you?
It has. It really has. And listen, he hasn't taken a bunch of punishment, but he's had a lot of mileage on his legs, almost 12,000 yards rushing, you know, another few thousand receiving out of the backfield. His ability to stay healthy for the most part and to stay relevant and just put up numbers has impressed me. I think last year was a difficult year for him because he just didn't have his legs underneath him when he went out there to Kansas City. And obviously Damian Williams played very well. I don't know how much he has left in the tank, but I'm happy for him that he's going to give it another chance down there in Tampa Bay.
All right. And he also wanted to know that punt return touchdown ball. Do you have that prominently somewhere in your house?
I do. In my office, I have all of my, some of my touchdown balls right up on the mantle in my office, in my bookshelves. And I had to put them away because I had them all in a box. And my son thinks every football he picks up is kind of throw it around and kick it. They have the tape on them that says, uh-huh, you know, what game they're from and things like that. And he's gone to town on a lot of these balls.
So what are the ones you have displayed? How many do you have displayed? Which ones are the most important ones to you?
I think the touchdown ball, that one, the versus Giants is a important one. For me, when I made All Pro, I think it was 2007, was an important one. 2,100 yards from scrimmage, an Eagles record, was an important one. You know, just to name a few. And obviously, we got a Super Bowl ball, you know, winning the NFC Championship game, just to name a few. All of those things are important to me. And really, they're all good memories from my days there in Philadelphia.
All right. You didn't have to pay for those balls, did you? You could just take those balls with you?
I'm pretty sure I paid for them somehow.
Oh, you did pay for them?
Absolutely. Well,
yeah, when you throw a ball in the stands, don't they charge you?
You know what? I've never threw one in the stands, but I'm sure they find a way to get that money from you. They just don't give out footballs, I can tell you that.
I know. All right, let's take a break. 610-632-0975. I'm going to bring you in on this conversation. I figured out a way I could put this on the air. This is a story out of New York Post. Have you seen what I'm talking about?
Well, my sister texted me, and she gave me a word that you can use.
Yeah, I got the word, I think.
You got it?
Yeah, I'm gonna do it cutesy. I'm going to use... That's all. But I want to bring the circumstance. I want to bring Brian in on this, too. All
okay.
Right? Now, people have been waiting for this all day. I'm trying to figure out to put this the way on the air that would not make people cringe. So I think I figured out a way. All right, 610-632-0975. Mike Misnelli Show back after this.
The Mike Misnelli Show. To 97.5, The Fanatic.
All right, it is 4:30, and it is time to update our Twitter poll at 4:30. Brought to us by Paul B. Moyer and Sons with Natalie Eganoff. Nat?
Thank you very much, Mike. Today's poll has over 800 votes on it so far. Can Sixers fans and Flyers fans unite for the restart? 67% said yes, come together. 13% said no, Sixers fans won't. 20% said no, Flyers fans won't.
Come together.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Come on, let's get together. Listen, this weekend's a big weekend. It's for real. For real.
And I noticed, on our Instagram is the photo that we took of the three of us prior with the corona.
Yes.
And people were saying, oh, well, I'll watch hockey because it's a real sport. Like, negative comments on the picture.
You see, I got no time for that.
I know.
Yeah, listen, I understand where it comes from. It comes from insecurity.
Yeah.
This is a COVID world. These teams have a shot. We can believe that they were going to pull this off in the NHL and the NBA. So there's no time for that petty jealousy. Next year, you'll get the petty jealousy.
What's that saying? The best thing in life to hold on to is each other.
There you go.
Not literally.
Right.
Now.
Correct.
They can't do that with the COVID.
But metaphorically,
I got what you're saying. And that's the problem. And that's what I mean. The venom has been one-way venom.
Yeah.
Like the Sixers are guilty fans of being dismissive.
Yes.
But the venom is all one-way venom from the Flyers.
Yeah,
fans.
I've always said that.
There are more Sixer fans that will follow the Flyers than Flyer fans that will follow the Sixers.
Yeah, and we should all be in this together. Kobe Cohen, for example, I've been talking to him a lot during the quarantine.
Yeah.
Great guy. I'm looking forward to his work with the Flyers game.
Yeah.
I enjoy it.
Yeah. And, we got to put that aside for right now. Anyway, the Corona beer takeover show today. That's right. The show's being taken over by Corona. Enjoy tomorrow night's Sixers game with your favorite Corona beer. Corona is an official partner of the 76ers. Did you just crack open a Corona there, Brian?
I did just crack open a Corona. I didn't know you were going to do that.
That's awesome.
That was right on time.
That's perfect. All right, let's come back to the phones and talk to Mark in Levittown. Mark, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Mark.
Hey, what's up, guys? Excited to talk to you. I'm from Levittown, PA. I'm a Bristol Township music teacher. And in January, we wrote this song for the Sixers. It was called We Ready Now, The Wait Is Over. And in January, we thought we only had to wait for the playoffs, but now we had to wait for the entire pandemic. So since we waited so long, plus you factor in from 2001 till now, it seems like the song was even more fitting and maybe had some new life to it for the fans.
Yeah, well, where's this song? Did you send it to me?
I sent it to all three of you guys an email. It's on YouTube. You can type in We Ready Now, Sixer song.
I tell you what, we're gonna try to play that a little later.
That'd be awesome, man. With some highlights, and when I was putting it together with the highlights, I got so fired up because this is a team. I mean, maybe they're not five all-stars in the start, but they're close. This is the most talent we've had in so long.
Yeah, we got good vibes from the Bucks County music scene.
Yeah.
The one guy, Emick, making our the Friday theme. Did we play that tonight? We didn't play the Friday theme today, did we? Did we forget to do the Friday theme?
I don't know if it was in there.
The smooth mellow, the Mike Misnelli open?
No, it wasn't today.
We didn't
today.
Do that today.
I don't know what happened.
That's on me.
Oh, that's all right.
That's on me.
We haven't heard that in a while. But anyway, yeah, we'll play that a little later. You guys, Tyrone, you have that? He sent it to me, too, so I can send it to you.
Yeah,
I
sent it to email.
Yeah, I do have it.
It's a little mix of rock and hip-hop, like when we grew up in Bristol, PA, in the 80s and 90s. That's what we had.
So yeah, is it clean?
Yeah, definitely.
All right, cool.
It's family friendly.
All right, awesome. Yeah,
I'm just hoping to hype the fans up.
I think it's a good idea, brother.
All right, thanks, Mike.
All right, yeah, I did see that somewhere in my email.
I saw it too, but I just didn't get a chance to listen to it yet.
Yeah, okay, well, we'll have to go. We'll have to, take his word.
Yeah, family friendly.
Well, didn't they used to do that on TV? Make it or break it?
Yeah.
And they used to break records on the air?
I think so.
They had a DJ, all right, make it or break it. And then vote on whether you break it.
Yes.
He'd take the record off and just break it.
And yeah. That's what we'll do with this.
Yeah, that's not right.
You're asking Natalie. Natalie, she wasn't even born yet when they were playing records like that and breaking records.
I know.
No, her dad had a big record collection.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know stuff.
Yeah. No,
sorry, man. You're just so young. You're just so young. You were around when they had records.
I'm not that young. I mean, I am comparatively.
She is aware of the existence of vinyl. By the way, were you a vinyl man? Like, did your dad rock the vinyl back? Because Tyrone has had a vinyl resurgence here.
You know what? Because I am in Brooklyn a lot, and it's kind of, it's a weird place, and it has a lot of culture and things like that. I bought a record player probably about 5-6 years ago when I first moved there, and I have a bunch of records. And my parents, I was a baby in the early 80s as well. And that's all we listened to. Friday night, Saturday night, fish fry. All we did was listen to records all the time. And it was a good time. So, yeah, my parents, they still have all of their vinyl records in their basement. So I am.
Wow, I cannot believe I didn't keep my records, man. What kind of an idiot am I to just get rid of records?
No foresight, man.
Technology. Usually I could, I could see that would be like, I don't know. I thought the record got passe once the cassette came in, and then the cassette got passe when the CD came in. Now the CD's passe. Tyrone and Natalie were over my place, and they checked out I got an old, I got to get rid of stuff. I don't know what to do with it now. I used to have those big, tall, thin speakers.
Yeah, I remember those.
All right, so now I got a receiver that's worthless. The speakers are worthless.
Yep.
The DVD player is worthless. The CD player is worthless. All worthless.
No,
what
that's
do you do with it? It's just an ornament in my living room.
It's beautiful, though. It's a beautiful piece.
Yeah,
I do with the speakers?
Because I still have my speakers in the basement.
All right, but what can I do with those speakers to make them, in this world, to make them worthy?
Still right now, get the output from your TV into your receiver. And then the receiver is what feeds the speakers because the speakers are passive. So it needs the receiver.
Okay. So I can listen to my TV through the speaker.
You can still do that or your music.
The sound, the quality is not going to be there with the older speaker. That's the problem with the older speaker.
I disagree.
These are good speakers.
Yeah, I think the older speakers.
These are high level speakers I had, man. I forget what brand they were. They were top notch. They're tall and thin.
Well, they may not be valuable to you now, but if you hold on to them for another 30 years, they probably will be valuable.
Boy, I'm going to pass them on to my heirs?
Wait that long. And a lot of people will argue that speakers sound better as they get broken in.
Yeah.
Like, I think that it takes, some people think you got to have a few hundred hours of continuous use before the speaker really breaks in the way that you want it.
Yeah.
That's why there's some people that will play music when they're not home.
I haven't
to help break those speakers in.
I can't remember the last time I had these. I used them. I really can't. I haven't played a CD in how long?
You should turn on the tunes, open your door. The backyard's nice.
Mount the speakers outside somewhere.
Yes.
All right.
Let's
go to Landon in Hazleton. Landon, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Landon.
Hey, Mike.
What's up, Landon?
Hey, I'm a high school senior. I'm actually calling from about 2 hours north of Philly, town called Hazleton.
Oh, I know Hazleton. I went to Penn State, brother. Route 80. Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. I'm hoping one day I could do just what you do, talk about sports. I mean, I love the show. Tune in a lot on TV. I actually don't get it on the radio up here.
Yeah.
But, so I was wondering just what you thought, and maybe you've talked about this a million times. I'm not really sure, but as a Phillies fan growing up and watching them, you know, kind of watching the prospects come up through the system, you got guys like Darren Ruff, Cameron Rupp.
Yeah.
How long do you think they're going to be able to hold on to these pitchers who are consistently kind of underperforming? Not that I don't like.
Well, you talk about my favorite three? Are you talking about Vinny Velasquez and Zach Eflin and Pavagina? How long? Listen, 3 years ago, I would have given him cab fare. So, to me, I have no idea what they're thinking about these guys. I would think that if they don't perform in this year, however abbreviated it is, that'll be the last wave.
I mean, I really liked Michael Franco, and I liked Cesar Hernandez. But I think it was time for the Phillies to let them go when they did. Especially Franco, because he was so inconsistent. As much as he was a great player, brought a lot of energy to the team that I think...
Had a game-winning home run the other night.
Yeah, I mean...
All right, go. Landon, their system is terrible right now. And I don't know what to say about it. It's hard to believe that they have assembled baseball men and have that weak of a farm system with not ready to play people.
I totally agree.
Now, they got two guys now on the big club that are going to be on the big club in 6 days. So I'm a little optimistic that they have a viable starting young arm.
We don't know if that young arm's going to be up because they have not given. They could bring up at any moment.
At least I know they got him. I don't know about Bohm yet either. But I got to, pick my spots. Hey, listen, Landon, good luck to you, man. You going to go to college? Where are you going to go?
I really don't know yet. I'm kind of looking around. Syracuse is a top option for me. I'd love to go there.
Syracuse is a big journalism school.
There's sports.
Brian, you have any suggestions for where you want to go to school? Brian?
When you mentioned Syracuse, I think Syracuse is a great start there.
Wait a minute. I was throwing you like an alley-oop there.
Well, yeah, of course. Syracuse is a great start. But now, when you talk about schools, if you're talking about any school, you have to think about Villanova University. Yeah.
Villanova University, but you go there, you learn to make money. You don't learn anything about journalism. So go to a
Temple.
Yeah,
Temple's got a great journalism
school. You want to come to the big city, Landon?
Do
that?
I'd love to go to Philly.
All right, man. Well, listen. Good luck to you.
Don't go to Rutgers. I can tell you that. That's the place you don't want to go. It's to Rutgers.
Oh, shots fired.
Rutgers is pretty good school.
Come on, man.
Yeah,
the
athletic programs leave something to be desired, but it's a pretty good school.
That's all right, Brian.
We've been getting along too much lately. I feel like we've gotten too close lately.
He's bitter because Rutgers didn't want him. A little bitter.
It's one of the schools that didn't want me right there, Rutgers.
We're taking a quick break. I'll come back with this story. People wait for this story. I got to tell it now.
I can't wait to hear you tell it.
Well, see, I'm going to use the word that the guy actually used in the story.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
To clear myself.
Does it begin with A?
No, it begins with a W.
Oh.
Mm. We might not have the right story. I don't think we had the right story. This story is a preposterous story that I'm going to call BS on. But since it was in the New York Post, listen, this is a story you would see in a supermarket tabloid, right? You remember, like, not even the Inquirer. You remember tabloids like the Globe?
Yeah,
and
Star.
Worldwide News?
Yes.
Like, alien impregnates school teacher.
Yes.
You know, like Blair and stuff like that. Like, that's what this kind of story is. And we're back after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show. The Fanatic.
All right, it's 4:47. It's a Friday, so we pulled out all the stops. So I'm about to tell you a story, which I'm going to call BS on. But since it was in the New York Post, listen, that's not the bastion of journalism, but
New York Post has some crazy stories.
They do have some crazy stories, which means this is a crazy story. I don't know if it's true or not, so I'll just put it out there, right? Because it comes out of the UK.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so there's a guy, and his name's Malcolm. And he's a mechanic. And unfortunately for Malcolm, he had an infection in an area that turned his fingers, toes, and his appendage.
Member?
Yes, he calls it his willy. I give you the cosmic banana. So it fell off.
Yeah,
and he felt really embarrassed because it fell off, and all he had there was a
nub,
a bump. So apparently, his doctor was in the UK is his.
He got it.
Dr. David Ralph of London's University College Hospital, which I think is a real thing, and the doctor is so deft at this kind of surgery that he is called. He is called the appendage master. It unleashes this nut.
He's the
appendage master.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what he's really called. But I tried to clean it up. So this guy said his life fell apart. He had no self-confidence. He drank too much. He didn't see family and friends. He didn't want to have to face up to it. So this guy had created for him what the it's called a bionic appendage.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he built the appendage on as an armed graft procedure, which took 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so the guy has an appendage attached to the inside of his left forearm. And it's connected to the urethra and the whole bit, and that's how he functions now.
You didn't mention that he requested to extend it.
Yes, he
why wouldn't?
Wow.
He asked the doctor to make it 2 inches bigger than what he had.
That makes
sense, though. That's fair.
I want the exact same on your arm.
You want it bigger?
Eventually.
I can see you want it bigger in the area.
I would imagine.
It's prohibitive on your arm. You gotta wear nothing but long sleeves now and baggy sleeves.
In England, no watches or anything.
Bad weather. Well, here's what he says. Not having an appendage felt awful. It's most men's worst fear. For me, I was never worried about sex because I already had 2 children. It was always about my self-confidence and simple things like using the loo. He's British.
Yeah.
Obviously.
I believe now, this story.
You believe this story?
The reason is because I used to listen to the, Ricky Gervais's podcast.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
obviously from there.
Yeah.
And years ago, he talked about this particular doctor doing something and growing something else on somebody's arm. It's like apparently what that doctor does. So for that reason, yeah. I believe the story. Because Ricky Gervais was probably talking about it in like 2009.
Really?
About this particular doctor. Not about this case, about the doctor that does
it. The doctor that does it.
Yeah.
The man,
and it's on the arm.
The appendage master.
Yes.
Well, so I guess, and I'm looking at this story when you're talking
yeah.
about it. I guess he's grown it there on his arm, but he plans on transferring it back to his normal,
yeah.
the proper location at some point.
I didn't see that part of it.
Yeah,
it
does. Right?
Yes.
Well, so, but here
so it's not permanently on his arm. He's going to move it back to...
And I would make that sacrifice. I'd do whatever I needed to do on my arm.
This is why I think it's BS. Because he says, I took to it so much that I nicknamed it Jimmy.
I would call it Jimmy.
Hey, Mike, did you read the part?
Come on, man.
It cost him $65,000 to add it.
So $65,000, he can actually have sex.
Wow.
Did you read that part of it?
I didn't get to that part.
They have attached a hand pump. Now stop it. Now, this story cannot be true.
It's true.
It says he's going to have it grafted between his legs by the end of the year.
Good luck to my man. I don't know. $65,000, it's a lot of money.
It gives you a different peace of mind, though.
Yeah,
sure.
See, Brian, we thought we'd close out on that. A humorous note.
Well, thank you.
All right. You take that story into the weekend with you, all right? You have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week.
Brian Westbrook joining us on a Friday. I'm calling BS. Sorry. 5 o'clock hour is ahead. You know those British tabloids can put anything in a paper.
Not sure.
There's pictures. You
know? There's a picture where it's blurred out. They blurred out.
But you could see the...
Stop it.
The area.
I am not buying this at all.
I'm sold. I'm following
I don't
this
understand
guy.
If he was going to get it. Why would it have to be transferred from his arm? Why could the 2 year
blood flow?
Oh.
He has to take your tissue and all. There's a reason. That's why I believe it, because it got explained before. You get right by your veins, you get all that stuff to get it to take. It has to be there.
And then it just grows like a plant.
All right. Well,
kind of. With your body.
In any event. It's time for a break. Yeah, we're wide open as we go to the 5 o'clock hour. 610-632-0975. Mike Mussinelli Show returns after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.